Well, I have the wonderful violinist Randall Goosby here to talk about his second album with Decca Classics. And we're going to talk about that, but this is actually, I think, the third time that we've talked, Randall. You came to Toledo a few years ago and performed music by the Chevalier de Saint-Georges.
Mm-hmm.
And then we spoke when you released your first album on Decca called Roots. And now we have another album with another iconic composer of color. It's Florence Price. And this is the first commercial recording, as I take it, of the violin concertos by Florence Price. First of all, before we talk all about that, welcome to you. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the overview of this album. I mentioned that, it's a premiere recording of two of these concertos by Florence Price, but you paired it with the very well-known concerto by Max Bruch. And I wonder why you chose to pair those two and what they signify for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't too difficult, actually, to figure out the pairing. I mean, obviously, the centerpiece of the album is Florence Price. These two concerti and her music in general is very important and very close to my heart for a number of reasons. But obviously, you know, the common ground that we share culturally, I think, is something that means a lot to me, especially in this field of classical music. And so I wanted to find something that's obviously a little bit better, better known, that I could pair that means just as much, and that is the Bruch Concerto. Obviously, for very different reasons. I'm sure Bruch and I don't share that much in common, at least culturally speaking. But in terms of, just why I love classical music, I mean, Bruch is one of the best examples I can think of. This is one of the first violin concerti I ever picked up and learned, and still to this day remains one of my favorites. I haven't even come close to getting tired of this concerto. So I thought it would be cool to have two completely different composers that mean the world to me in very different ways. And actually, throughout the process, I've discovered, that there is a little bit of similarity, I think, in what they have to express and the ways in which they do that. Very lush, romantic writing on both sides. So it was a really fun way to kind of get a deeper look into both of these composers.
You are doing this recording, or you did this recording, with the Philadelphia Orchestra under Yannick Nézet-Séguin, who is a wonderful young conductor, as we all know. I wonder if your treatment of the Bruch, in listening to it, it sounds fresh to me. I wonder how much of that was implemented by this combination, Nézet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Oh, certainly. I mean, there's always a freshness to anything that Yannick and Philly, do together. It was just a really wonderful experience being able to do this with them. We actually, Yannick and Philly and I, we did one sort of standalone performance of the Bruch Concerto at the Saratoga Festival last summer. So this wasn't our first go around with the piece, although we had essentially a three-hour session to get the whole concerto done. We didn't have any rehearsal time. We didn't have any patch sessions. So that freshness was sort of a necessity. We had to just, get everybody in the room. Everybody kind of did their thing, and we played off of each other and, gave and took, really, really spontaneously and in the moment. And I think that's, a large part of why that sort of freshness came through, because it really was a studio recording, that Bruch Concerto, as opposed to the Price, which were live.
I've read that you had talked about the slow movements of concertos, and the Bruch in particular, that you enjoy those slow romantic movements. Can you talk a little bit about that and your approach to both of these concertos?
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess you could say I'm kind of a romantic guy, especially when it comes to classical music. I've always just loved slow movements. There's something about Just kind of having the opportunity to wear your heart on your sleeve and just let the music speak. And the second movement of Brooke is an incredible example of that, especially in such a what becomes a really just lively and energetic, outgoing, extroverted third movement. The second movement is so intimate and personal, and in the setting of a big concerto, that's something that I think I really wanted to bring out. And I think Yannick and Philly and their sensitivity as an ensemble really made that quite easy, honestly. And as for the price, I mean, there's as I mentioned earlier, there are a good bit of similarities between the lushness and the lyricism of something like the second movement in the Bruch. And, a lot of these sort of very songful, spiritual sections in both of the Price Concerti where, you could play it as if you were, singing a Puccini opera or something like that. But you can also play it as if you're humming to yourself or you're humming to your child or your grandchild or something like this. I mean, these are the influences that made their way into Price's music, after all. So it's really important, I think, for me to, obviously the opportunity to play a slow movement is lovely, but to really bring out what feels to be the essence of the music is what it's all about.
You mentioned briefly, your history with the Brooke Concerto. I wonder if you can talk a little bit just about growing up. I mean, if there were like a 30 under 30 for violinists, you'd be at the top of that list.
I wouldn't say that myself, but I appreciate the lofty suggestion.
But, you're a protege of Itzhak Perlman. You won the Sphinx Concerto competition. You were first prize winner in the Young Concert Artist. I mean, the list just goes on and on. You've performed with orchestras around the world, all the major orchestras. I wonder if you can give us just a little bit of a background of where it all began. We've talked about this before, but for people listening this time around, maybe you can touch on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I'll try to keep it short. I started violin when I was 7 years old. I didn't know anything about classical music, let alone the violin. My mom, as moms do, she just figured out a way to get one in my hands and find me a teacher. And that kind of set, got the snowball rolling, if you will. She started buying all the classical music records she could. I had probably the complete discography of Itzhak Perlman by the time I was 10. We were always listening to some violin concerto in the car. Given all of that, I mean, it wasn't really until I was in high school and I had a chance to attend Itzhak Perlman's summer music program out on Shelter Island that I really decided, like, okay, yeah, this is something I want to do for the rest of my life. At that point, I already sort of had all of the, ammunition, if you will. I mean, I had all the repertoire in my head. I had finally found some friends in music who I could really relate to and share with in this pursuit. So, it was a long road, and there was a lot of good luck. There were a lot of great people involved who, just put my well-being first, and I'm really grateful for that. Certainly don't take for granted all of the incredible opportunities that are starting to come my way. And I think at this point, as much fun as it is to go out and perform and share great music with great audiences in great places, I'd like to start figuring out how to weave in more sort of community-oriented work and bringing this music to more communities who just don't have, who aren't in position to, really consume it all that regularly. There's cities and stretches of the United States that have never heard a classical music performance, and I'd like to be a small part in changing that.
Yeah, definitely. Are you still playing the Stradivarius?
That's right. Yeah. As of January this year.
Can you talk a little bit about your violin? How long you've had it, and what's special about it for you?
Absolutely. Well, this recording actually was not made on the Strad. This was last fall, okay. So I still had the 1735 Guarnieri del Gesù from the Stradivari Society in Chicago. Oh,
it was just a Guarnieri, okay.
That's right. That's right. But I have since been so fortunate to have a Strad come into my hands thanks to a very generous loan by the Samsung Foundation of Culture in Korea. It was played on for the past, I guess, 4 or 5 years by the great Clara Jimmy Kong. And this one was made in 1708. It's nicknamed the Strauss, not for Richard Strauss or any of the other Strausses. I think it was just a family who ended up buying the instrument some 100 years ago or so. But it's an absolutely incredible instrument. Certainly the next record that I do with Decca will be made on this. And it's just been an absolute joy to play. It's a completely different palette of sounds and colors than what the Del Gesù had. And not to say that it's better or worse, but I mean, it feels as if, you know, a world of opportunity has opened up in terms of expression and in terms of, really creating a world of sound. So I've just been, you know, absolutely elated to get to know this instrument and looking forward to the next few years of, getting even closer.
Well, in addition to your working with Itzhak Perlman, you were sort of a protege of the Sphinx Foundation, which is based in Detroit, not far from here. Mm-hmm. And that's really the place, I guess, where you began this idea of becoming an advocate for diversity in classical music. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your relationship with Sphinx and how that has shown itself in your professional life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been involved with the Sphinx organization since I was 13. I guess that was 2010, I think, that I first participated in their competition, their annual competition. I was fortunate enough to win the first prize in the junior division. And as you mentioned, I mean, that's really where this idea of being a sort of artist advocate came about. I mean, already when I was 13, I was having the opportunity to go and perform with great orchestras. And funny enough, what made me way more nervous than going to perform with these big orchestras was going into small schools, largely made up of children from minority ethnic backgrounds, because I would go into these schools thinking like, oh man, like, you know, these kids already know what they like, what they're interested in. They don't want to hear any classical music. And literally every time I'd go into one of these schools, you know, I'd look out and I'd, you know, play a little Bach or something, and kids' jaws would be on the floor because they'd never heard this music before. They'd never seen a violin played live in front of them. And that kind of just got, you know, opened my eyes and opened my mind to the fact that, like, wow, there are whole communities and communities within communities that just don't have access to this incredible art form. And, you know, it really inspired me to, you know, start forging a path for myself to try and change that and try to bring this music to more communities that don't have, you know, easy access to it. So that's, you know, the role that Sphinx has played. And I've remained close with the Sphinx Familia, as they so affectionately call themselves. And I'll actually be returning to Detroit to judge for the first time the Sphinx competition next year, 2024. So I'm looking forward to that and looking forward to, you know, as many opportunities as are possible with Sphinx in the coming years.
Well, we'll keep an eye out and an ear out for that as well. The recording is from Decca Classics with the Philadelphia Orchestra under Yannick Nezet-Séguin, the concertos for violin by Max Bruch, as well as Florence Price in their first commercially released recording. Also on there, that wonderful little chestnut by Florence Price, Adoration, which you perform with the orchestra. That's become kind of an encore piece for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's become a little bit of a staple, I guess, in the diet. There was a incredible arrangement written for, I believe it was written for Josh Bell to perform with the Philly Orchestra. I think it was during the pandemic, by Jim Gray. And anyone who knows the Philly Orchestra knows about the Philly strings. And Jim Gray certainly knew what he was doing, creating this very special arrangement. So it was really wonderful to have the opportunity to not only to record this, but you mentioned an encore. This was literally recorded as an encore live from these concerts that we did in Philly. So it was a really, really special project all around.
Well, that's wonderful. It's a beautiful recording and definitely a must-have, if only for the Florence Price, but also a really fresh, energetic take on the Bruch Concerto, which has been, you know, assayed by just about every great violinist, which includes you, Randall Goosby, violinist. Thanks for the music. Thanks for all that you do for classical music. And thanks for talking to us here on FM 91.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad. This has been wonderful. Looking forward to talking with you or seeing you sometime soon.